Have you ever wondered why in the book of Job, Satan is on God's payroll? Well, hey there, Alex. Welcome into another episode of My Strange Bible. How you doing, my friend?
Oh, just dandy, Steve. Always fun to get together for these podcasts. And yeah, you know what? I actually have wondered for a long time why Satan is on God's payroll in Job. In fact, it's one of those strange things that just seems to be glossed over quite a bit through a normal Bible reading. So,
Yes, I have to admit, when I, you know, like, obviously, this is just another one of those things, right? Growing up, you're reading through the Bible, you do it, you know, a few times, and it's like, you always stop here, and you're just, you have a little bit of that cognitive dissonance, they call it, right? You're reading through, and you're like, well, it doesn't really seem like Satan should just be able to, like, show up in heaven or whatever, right? Like, that's basically, when you're thinking about this, that's typically what you're thinking. Like, it doesn't really seem like Satan should be able to just, like, show up in heaven and talk to God, because didn't he get, like, thrown out of heaven? And who are these sons of God characters? The sons of God went, and then Satan went, too. And so what's happening with that? And it's kind of weird. Mm-hmm. And so my view on this has always just been a head scratcher, right? This can't.
Yeah.
There can't be any, like, there has to be something more to this, but I don't understand what it is. And so this is weird.
Yeah. Right? But without looking at it, without taking a serious glance at it or really trying to dig deep into really thinking about it, it's just a bunch of hullabaloo that you just kind of read and think, oh, well. And I think that I'm guilty of it. I know that you most likely have been, or and maybe even still are, and all Christians are. But I think it's good that we take God at his word. But I think sometimes we take that very lightly. So instead of wanting to understand things, we just read and say, well, it just is what it is. And then we go past it. And I think that's a very wrong approach to reading scripture.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Mm-hmm. All right. So my guess, the way that we're titling this and approaching this episode, my guess is that there's going to be two kinds of people listening, okay? One person is going to be sort of maybe familiar with our podcast, or at least familiar with sort of the way we approach the Bible around here. And they're going to be like, I know where you're going with this. I can't wait to see where you have to say. And then I'm hoping that a lot of people end up finding this podcast who are like, I've always wondered this. What in the world is Satan doing on God's payroll? And so if that's you, if you're in that camp, then I think we owe it to you to maybe zoom out to 30,000 feet for at least a couple minutes here and give you a little bit of context for the thoughts that are to follow, okay? So a brief refresher on what is called, what is very commonly known as the divine counsel worldview, okay? So this is, more than anything, I think it's an approach to the Bible. I think that's a fair way of saying it.
That's a good way to put it, yep.
Now, I think that it's anachronistic way of putting it, right? Because in my view, and in the view of anyone who holds the divine counsel worldview, this would just be a normal, boring Israelite worldview, right? To yes. The early church and certainly in ancient, you know, Jewish history, right? So the fact that we have to give it a name right now sounds like we're imposing a framework on the Bible. Really, that's not the idea. The idea is that this is actually what the Bible is aiming to teach, okay? And what the Bible has always taught, it's just that for many, many reasons, these ideas have not been very popular in the last roughly 500 to 1,000 years. And there are reasons for that that are beyond the scope of this episode, though that may be a good one for the future. So
yes, that would be.
So what is this thing? The divine counsel worldview, okay? In short, it's also referred to as the Deuteronomy 32 worldview. And the reason for this is because the idea is that there are other gods in the Bible that Yahweh is at war with, okay, in a sense. Even zooming out further than that, there is sort of an originally created spiritual family of God that are clearly seen when you actually read the Bible with your eyes and ears attuned to this idea, but that in Christian tradition and history, we sort of just end up glossing over. And part of that worldview, again, denotes a hierarchy, a structure of the spiritual world. And it shows that God uses spiritual beings much like he uses human beings, okay? He uses human beings to accomplish his will and his purposes, and he uses spiritual beings to do that as well. So, again, if you're kind of new around here, let's start off with something simple, okay? Let's go with a category you already have, which is angel, right? A category you already have is an angel. And let me just put a little subcategory in here for your thinking, which is a fallen angel, okay? We've at least heard these terms before, okay? And so when you start thinking about an angel, okay, you typically ascribe some sort of ontology to that. Now, that's a really big word that just simply means the way something is, right? Something's state of being, the way something exists. It's ontology. It's real, okay? And the reality is that the terms used for angel in the Bible, for example, malak, the word malak, is a Hebrew word that simply means messenger, okay? So it doesn't mean like any and all spiritual beings are called angels. It just means that there are some angels that are messengers. In the Bible, you have other roles. You have, for example, the seraphim, okay? The seraphim are essentially these winged creatures who are essentially the singers, right? The court, the singers in the royal court, right? In Yahweh's royal court. You have cherubim, okay? Cherubim in Yahweh's royal court are the throne guardians, okay? And these are all different kinds of spiritual being or Elohim, okay? The word Elohim does not mean capital G-O-D, like we often say in English. The word Elohim is a place of residence term, okay? That means that it's a term for beings that live in the spiritual world. And there are lots of beings in the Bible that are called Elohim, not just the God of the Bible. So the way that Dr. Michael Heiser, who recently passed away a little over a year ago now, used to say it, is that Yahweh, the God of the Bible, is an Elohim, but no Elohim is like Yahweh. So this is why when the Bible says that Yahweh is the Lord of Lords, the King of Kings, that actually means something real. It's not just talking about royalty in terms of in the physical world, it's talking about the spiritual world as well. And again, there are just hundreds of verses in the Bible that very clearly make that plain. Probably the easiest one to, you know, go back to is whenever Paul, especially in Ephesians 6, this comes up, whenever Paul is talking about principalities and powers and rulers and principalities and powers of the air, that sort of thing. We understand, and this is also can be seen in the book of Psalms. Psalm 89 talks about this. It's very clear that God is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords in the heavenlies, not just in the earthly realm, right? It's heavenly beings that are in mind. So we have Yahweh, the Elohim above all other Elohim. We have these other Elohim. If we want to think of them as angels and then have a category for fallen angels, that's fine too. But that sort of sets the groundwork for what this being is in the book of Job, which is a capital S and the word Satan. So I'm going to stop there, Alex. For comprehension's sake, let's just pretend you don't know anything about this. Any questions that have come up or anything so far, I want to make sure even people who are brand new can kind of track with us here.
Yeah, I think the probably one question, natural question is, as we get to in Job, well, let me just read the verse because then the next natural question I think will come up. So how about we do that? Does that sound good?
Yeah.
So Job 1:6, we're just basically kind of not focusing on the Job story in itself, but on the Satan story involved with God here. So 1:6 says, "One day the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came with them. The Lord asked Satan, 'Where have you come from?' 'For roaming through the earth,' Satan answered him, 'and walking around on it.'" So the two main questions there, of course, would be, one day the sons of God. So I know you kind of touched on, angels, cherubim, seraphim, and all the rest. But the sons of God thing is maybe different or maybe the same. And then also, yeah, Satan with a capital S. Does that mean Satan is actually in heaven with God? Is he allowed to wander about as he may? Is it the actual Satan that we think about? So those would be the two natural fundamental questions that would come to mind.
Absolutely. Okay. So in a way, your second question is what this entire podcast episode is about, right?
Yes.
So we're going to answer that question throughout the course of the episode. I'm glad you asked that first question because that first question is the very next place I thought we should go. So that's perfect.
Yes. Okay. Perfect.
So we have these characters here sort of introduced. And we have this idea of the sons of God who went to God. Okay. And so who are these sons of God? Now, that is a loaded question if I've ever heard one. Okay. But let me give you sort of an idea here. Virtually every biblical scholar, and that, I mean, that's saying something. Okay. Virtually every biblical scholar is convinced that when the Bible is talking about sons of God in the Hebrew is B'nai Elohim, okay, that it's talking about, let's just call it angels, okay? It's talking about spiritual beings or angels, okay? In Genesis 6, that's the first place that we have this idea introduced of the sons of God. There have been, it's been very popular in years past to try to make arguments about the sons of God in Genesis 6 actually being either divinized human rulers or, the godly men from the line of Seth. In my opinion, both of those arguments fall down. The vastly more popular, and I would argue scholarly position, is that the sons of God are essentially what we would call fallen angels there. Okay. Another piece of evidence, just so that you don't take my word for it. Another piece of evidence that would suggest that the sons of God in Job 1 and also in Job 2 are spiritual beings. Again, I'm going to go with the term angel there just for a minute, and then we're going to clarify further. Angels are spiritual beings. Another reason why I would say that that's the case is because actually later in the book of Job, there's an interesting line of what's called Hebrew parallelism that helps us clarify what's going on. So, when you have in Hebrew, there's something called synonymous parallelism. And so what you'll often see is a few lines. Typically, it's four lines. It goes something like AB, AB, or you could do AA, BB, and there's different combinations. But the idea is where the same idea will be reiterated, but put into different ways, okay? And so there is this passage just a little bit later in Job that talks about, were you there essentially when God created the world, when the sons of God shouted for joy and the morning stars sang together? Okay. The sons of God and the morning stars are the same thing. We call Jesus the bright and morning star. In the ancient world, stars were considered, we've talked about this on the podcast before, but stars were considered in the ancient world essentially to be spiritual beings. Now, again, to bring up that word ontology again, we're not entirely sure, at least I'm not. There are some people who have definite opinions. My opinion is not so definite. Do I think that when we have stars referred to in the Bible, it is literally talking about human being or spiritual beings, excuse me, or was that just an analogous way to refer to them because they were bright and shining? And I don't know if they looked up and they saw stars in the sky and they literally thought those were floating spiritual beings. There are some people who believe that that's the case. Regardless, especially if you take that view, it makes a lot of sense that the sons of God and the morning stars are basically being equated there, the same thing. And so that's at least a piece of evidence in the text itself that the sons of God are considered to be spiritual beings. And again, there's lots of other places that we could go if we had the time. Okay, so these sons of God, they're spiritual beings of some kind. We could call them angels. But we couldn't exactly call them angels is the problem. Because an angel, again, is a term that does not have ontology. What it is a role. Okay, the word malach in Hebrew simply means messenger. Okay, it's a messenger. The only exception to this, when the malach is a role, is a particular Elohim, the angel of the Lord, Malach Yahweh, this person has a particular role. At various times in the story, there's various things that he does. In the Exodus story, he's referred to as the destroyer, because he is the one who took the lives of those of the firstborn of the Egyptians. But also, he was the one in the pillar of cloud and of fire, okay? Leading the Israelites out of Egypt. Okay. And so that's a Malach Yahweh, but then we have a Malach, which is an angel, which is think the angel Gabriel, or that's gonna be the kind of angel that delivers messages. But then you've got these sons of God. And these sons of God, were, you know, essentially think of them as the divine council or the divine assembly. Psalm 82:1 is where we draw some of this language from. Also Psalm 89 and many other places. In the ancient world, all the different, you know, religious groups, Canaanite, Israelite, etc., they all had some sort of divine council. That is, there was a high God, and then there were lesser, little g, G-O-D, little Elohim, little E Elohim, little G. Well, there's only little E Elohim, but anyway, little G gods, right? Elohim, spiritual beings who were in service of the high God. And so that's what all indications are that these sons of God are. And to start tying some threads together, Satan, capital S, proper name, proper noun, Satan, we absolutely believe would have been one of those sons of God, okay? Originally created as having authority underneath of God, of course, in the heaven. And again, especially if you read the Book of Enoch, there's a lot of the ancient ideas that are found in there. But the idea essentially being that he sort of led the charge, this spiritual being, whatever his name is. I think in the Book of Enoch, he's referred to as Azazel or something like that, I think is what it is. But whether or not there's a direct correlation between this being and Satan, I'm not entirely positive, but I think so. And again, the idea being that essentially was the leader of the fallen angels, right? The leader of the bad guys. That's the idea that we're getting at. And so the sons of God have come to Yahweh here in the Book of Job. And it says that Satan came with them. And again, back to our initial question that we started asking 20 minutes ago, almost, if you can believe it, was, well, is this the guy? Is this the guy that we know and talk about as Satan in our Christian tradition? And how can that be? Mm-hmm. Because I thought he was like banned from heaven. How is he going up to heaven and talking to God? You just can't imagine him being welcome there.
Not just banned, but I think a common worldview too of a lot of Christians is that Satan is just always in hell.
Yes, and, of course. Yeah, yes, yeah, Dante's Inferno sort of idea, right? Yeah. He's got a pitchfork and a tail, and he's down there, and he's like doing his hell thing, you know? And, oh boy, that's another three or four episodes just right there. But yeah, so really, really strange. So let me pause there again. We're kind of at another breaking point here. But is there anything that we need to clarify in that little section there?
No, I don't think so. I think you covered it really well. The one thing I want to note, just something interesting is it says one day the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord. And then we have the story about how Satan or the Satan approaches God and what that conversation is about. But I just think it's cool how the sons of God came to present themselves before God, and we don't really know why or the reasoning for it. Is this like a daily occurrence? I know that, you know, we can get into time and how God is timeless, but is this a daily thing, or is this a special meeting that God called? It's just interesting that, you know, it doesn't tell us. I'm not going to like pretend to know or even guess, but I just think it's just the organization, the presentation of it is just a really cool scenario being set up.
Exactly. Yes. So this is a great question, a great sort of thought here. Again, we've mentioned this before too. I'll sound like a broken record if I say that every time this happens. In short, if you just found us now, go back and listen to the other episodes of this podcast, please.
And then you won't even need to watch this episode. Yeah, or skip to the end.
You will get an education, that's for sure. But we don't think of God, and this is actually popular because it's trending on Twitter right now. So maybe if I just say the words, Google will give us a little boost to the YouTube rankings here, right? Right, there's this idea going around, floating around right now that Christ is king. And there's anti-Semitic ties
to that.
I'm sure you saw all that mess. It's really a lot. Regardless of all of that, we often fail to think about the fact that the Bible uses language describing God as king. And Jesus is king for sure.
Yeah.
But God as a king, okay? And so when you start to put, like, when you start to draw all the lines together and connect the dots, oh, so much starts making sense. Wait a minute, he's a king. So doesn't it make sense that the Bible mentions princes who are spiritual yep. beings. We see that in the book of Daniel. Doesn't it make sense that the king has a messenger? Yes, that makes sense. Remember Hermes, the little guy with the wings, mm-hmm. right? In Greek mythology, right? So that makes sense. Well, wait a minute. What does a king have? Well, a king has subjects. He has a royal court, a sort of group of people.
A council
who yeah. lead underneath of him, okay?
And don't get the wrong impression of a council as someone who offers guidance to God.
Correct.
But think of a council as the king sits there and he allows people to work on his behalf.
Yes.
And he can say yay or nay.
Yes. We have tons of these council scenes in the Bible. But again, you probably just never thought of them before. 1 Kings 22, there's a divine council scene there. Okay. When Moses is on top of Mount Sinai, there's a divine council scene there. The New Testament refers back to the angels who were essentially, and the New Testament uses the word angels a little bit imprecisely, unfortunately, but that's how it was translated. So whatever, but like looks back at the angels who were witnesses to the covenant. Mount Sinai was a divine council scene, was a council throne room scene, okay? The same thing is happening, by the way, here, okay?
Yep.
The sons of God are coming to Yahweh. Now, again, we're not talking about like time. Again, I think that's the wrong way to think about it, because when you start introducing time, now what you're trying to do is you're bucking up against what biblical scholars call yeah. accommodation, right? It's this idea of like the Bible is written in such a way as to help humans understand it, because there are some things that we can't understand yeah. otherwise. And so I would say it's absolutely fair to say that this was just maybe there was a regular meeting that I will use in air quotes they held every day or something like you're getting yeah. at. The point yeah. is that this was a meeting of the council. And at mm-hmm. this meeting of the council in Job 1 and also the one in Job 2, we have the sons of God coming to Yahweh, and Satan was also with them. So what the heck does that mean? Okay. Are we ready to go there?
Yeah, good transition. I just want to know if Satan had to leave his pitchfork at the door or if he was able to bring it in.
I heard he was asked to.
Yeah, just like Gandalf in the Two Towers was asked to leave his staff, but he brought that in anyway.
Yeah. Okay, so there are three clues, if I can remember them all, because I've got them in my head. Okay, three clues right off the top of my head that I can see in this passage that would actually seem to suggest that Satan is not the being in view here. Now,
bum, 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 bum.
Bum, 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 bum. What? Steve, are you kidding me? Okay. Hear me out.
It's capitalized, Steve.
It is capitalized. It is capitalized. And so there's a lot to unpack here, believe it or not. Okay. So let's start with the first one. So, The first one is, I think actually the fact that the sons of God are mentioned is itself a clue that Satan is not in view. Okay? So just imagine, let's see, what's an example? Somehow I can just make this really, 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 really tangible. Okay? Let's imagine that you and your brothers-in-law, like let's say you have like four sisters, right? And like all your brothers-in-law are getting together, you're going to like put something together for the family, right? You guys are all like tough guys and, you know, whatever. But there's this one guy, that they got divorced, right? Your baby sister got divorced from her husband. And it was nasty. It was terrible. This guy cheated. It was awful. It was all good, right? And so you're getting together for a family meeting, okay? And let's just say you're the oldest, so you're getting together for the family meeting. It's all the guys. It's you and your brothers-in-law. And then your brothers-in-law come to you, and they bring along this outcast who tremendously sinned against your family. And this guy's like, I got an idea, guys. I got an idea. How about I just go torture your little sister and see if she still thinks that it's cool to be in the family, or like still if she still likes you or something like that. Mm-hmm. Now, would that fly? I think the obvious answer is no. And I get that that's a very human example. It's very niche, and I probably didn't even say all the words right because I'm bad at making up things on the spot if you can't tell. But I think the sort of idea holds. It would be really weird for a group of people who were in leadership of some sort over a particular delegation of people. In God's case, it's the entire planet, but anyway. Over a particular delegation of people. And then, like, this one outcast guy who, like, basically totally sinned against the entire group, right? Would just come along with them to, like, a normal family meeting. That seems weird. And then how much weirder would it be if the oldest brother in that weird little analogy scenario there actually gave him permission to do whatever he wanted to the to her, you know, his baby sister. That would be weird. And I think that would be sort of like what you have happening here. Because, again, Job is an imager of God, right? Job, if you believe your Bible, then Jesus died for Job, just like he died for you and me, okay? So Job is not only considered by the book to be extremely an upright person, but he's special, if for no other reason, in the fact that God loves him. He's a creation of God, okay? And so it would seem weird if the guy who led essentially a spiritual rebellion in heaven, so to speak, to use that language, who led the spiritual rebellion in heaven and brought other fallen angels down with him, hence the Genesis 6 incident, it would be really weird for God to just kind of give that guy free reign over Job. So that's kind of point number one. I think the fact that the sons of God are coming tells me that the Satan being mentioned here is probably another one of the council members. Now, he's mentioned separately and specifically, not because he's capital S, you know, personal name, personal pronoun, Satan, not because he's that guy. He's mentioned because that guy is going to play an important role as the story goes on. Does that first one make sense?
Yeah, makes sense to me, Steve.
Okay. All right, cool. So the second one, speaking of role, is, well, remember how we talked about how there are different roles. We've talked about sons of God or council members. We've talked about cherubim. We've talked about seraphim. We've talked about malach, which are messengers or angels. Well, there's another role. And this role is called the adversary. The adversary. Now, who do we, when we say the word adversary, well, who's the adversary in the New Testament? Well, that's Satan. We talk about Satan as being the adversary, right? That adversary, the devil, who walks about like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour, okay? Now, the adversary is the word in Hebrew, Satan. S-A-T-A-N is how we would say that in English, right? Satan. And specifically, the word that is mentioned is ha-Satan. So ha is the article, the. And so you've got the adversary. So I'm aware of the fact that in your Bible, it has a capital S and it says Satan. And you're thinking this is the guy. This is the leader of the rebellion in heaven. When we get to the New Testament, we call him Satan. This is that guy. The problem is that the Hebrew doesn't say that. The Hebrew says ha Satan. The Hebrew says the adversary. So humor me. Those verses that you read a minute ago, read them and substitute the adversary instead of saying the word Satan.
Yeah, 100%. So one day the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and the adversary also came with them. The Lord asked the adversary, "Where have you come from?" "From roaming through the earth," the adversary answered him, "and walking around on it."
Okay, cool. Now, again, the adversary. Think about that role. Think about what's another A word that you could put there that would also be a role. The advocate. Okay. For another thought experiment, I'm just pulling them out of thin air here today. Okay. The advocate. Let's say that the Hebrew word for the advocate was capital L lawyer. Okay. And it's like personal name lawyer, right? But another word for what a lawyer does is advocate, right? They're an advocate, right? So just so you could read, okay, the sons of God came with them, and so did the advocate. Or the sons of God came with them, and so did the adversary. By the way, Jesus is called our advocate. That's kind of interesting. He's our advocate with the Father, right? So he plays that role, but it's the advocate. So again, think in terms of a role. That's what Alex just read is actually what the text says. The sons of God and the adversary was with them. okay? The adversary, okay? So the point is, the sons of God, the adversary would not normally be a part of the council meeting, right? The adversary is just another role, right? Who has a particular job to do whenever that job comes out. But the council members brought him this time for whatever reason. Okay, so that's the second reason, is that there is no, you know, capital S, Satan. He was not known by that name at this time, okay? He became known. Satan, the leader of the rebellion, came known throughout Christian tradition and history, and then it shows up in our New Testament as Satan, capital S, personal pronoun and named being, Satan. And of course, then we go back and we can sort of retrofit that guy to fit the template as the original rebel in the Garden of Eden, right? The serpent, right? The New Testament explicitly creates that connection between Satan and the serpent.
Let me give another example here to maybe just another way to look at it.
Yeah.
Is you might say, well, how come it even signals this person out as a Satan? That seems kind of weird. Well, it's because it's what the story is about. It would be like if for some reason the story was about someone making a tribute song to God and it said, and the seraphim also came with them. It's just a transition into here's what the story is about and here's the next character being introduced.
100%. The story has to tell you who's there, right? In order for the story to play out. And of course,
it wouldn't just say the sons of God came before the Lord and then just was random about it, and then it was just blank about who the next character was.
Exactly. Now there have been some who have argued that this is not the right view, right? There have been some that argue, well, this actually is Satan, and I'm not going to pretend to know all the ins and outs of their arguments, so I'll just let you look that up. There are some who have written specifically about this. I think at the very least it's 50-50. I think you could absolutely make a case either way. But I'll tell you the third reason before I forget it, why I think it's a good clue that this is not the personal pronoun Satan, but actually just a divine being who had the role of the adversary. And that is because when he asks for permission to test Job, God grants him permission. Okay. Now, do you happen to think that Satan is in the habit of asking God for permission to do something specifically, and then God, in scripture, right, this is recorded, grants him permission to do it? I don't think every time Satan tests someone or leads someone astray or like interacts in the world, he's going to heaven and asking God for a permission slip to do this, and then God granting it, okay? The Satan is, again, in the New Testament, we see this language used, the God of this world, okay? When Satan tests Jesus in the wilderness and says, I can give you all this. He takes him to that top of the mountain, right? And says, I can give you everything you see here. That's another weird thing, right? It's like, well, how does Satan, doesn't he know who he's talking to? Well, of course he knows who he's talking to. He knows who he's talking to. But Jesus had emptied himself of the glories of heaven, of that stature, of that position as God in that sense, okay? Now, he didn't, again, I'm not a heretic, okay? So let's be careful, okay? There's lots of nuance around the degree of that emptying. I'm willing to go so far as to say that he laid down the glory, right? Whatever that means, he set aside that glory, whatever that means, okay? Not in a heretical way, but he set aside that glory. And he had not yet defeated the powers of evil. The resurrection was necessary for that. Okay. Jesus is king. Christ is king. Okay. But when Satan tempted him in the desert, he was the king. Satan was the king. Satan was the God of this world. He had the power over this world. He absolutely could have given Jesus all of those. In other words, he had the right. He had the authority to actually do that. Of course, Jesus had other plans, right? Because God sent him for a specific mission, and the mission was to crush the head of the serpent. Okay. So we don't see Satan ever asking God for explicit permission to do things. Satan does whatever the heck he wants to do. So this figure, though, the adversary, goes to Yahweh and asks for permission in the council meeting. And Yahweh grants it. Specifically what he says here, let me see if I can find it. Let's see. He says, one day the sons of God, have you considered? Yeah, okay. So Satan answered him, very well. Okay, this is verse 12, Job 1, 12. Very well, the Lord told Satan, everything he owns is in your power. However, do not lay a hand. This is the first temptation, so it's before the boils and all that. However, do not lay a hand on Job himself. So Satan, or the adversary, left the Lord's presence. So right in that one verse, you have, okay, cool. This seems like a good thought experiment, right? That's how God is responding to Satan. And then he says, everything he owns is in your power. Well, if this was capital S, Satan, I think that would have already been the case. God didn't have to give this to him. He already had it. And then he says, however, do not lay a hand on Job himself. So he's actually instructing this being who is going to listen to this instruction and not do what Yahweh said. So this is a person. Now, yes, of course, we believe as Christians, we of course believe that actual Satan, capital S Satan, is under the power and authority of God. Of course, we believe that. Okay. But you think that the original rebel, the one who led astray other divine beings to go do these horrific acts with the daughters of men in Genesis 6, and who is literally the ruler of this world and wants nothing but evil and destruction, you really think he's having such a cordial interaction here with Yahweh? Mm-hmm. And this thing going back and forth and him getting permission, him saying, okay, God, whatever you say, well, I won't do that. No, that's not Satan. That's not Satan. So I think those three reasons, the fact that this is a council meeting, the fact that the word is actually with a definite article, and you wouldn't say the Steve or the Alex, you know, just like you wouldn't say the Satan, the capital S Satan, you would say the Satan, the adversary. And then the fact that God gave him permission, and this being did with the permission only what he was supposed to do, and he essentially obeyed Yahweh's orders. Those three things.
And before you think, well, obviously he has to obey God because God told him he, you know, specifically not to put his hand on Job himself. Well, if we disobey God day in and day out, what makes you think that actual Satan can't? So to add to Steve's point, it wouldn't make sense whether God told him in person or if it was a subtle command or whatever. I don't think there's any point to him listening to God.
Yeah, right.
That's right. But to kind of push us maybe towards the next point, or at least getting there, is Steve and I are kind of going to show that regardless of whether you still hold to, well, I think it probably is Satan. That's just how I think, because your divine counsel worldview is kind of weird. Or maybe you're on kind of the DWC side where you think, okay, it probably is just the adversary. Steve and I are kind of going to show that it doesn't really matter which way you believe, because the application is still the same in the end.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. So here's my another question that came up as I was researching this and taking notes for this was, well, in what sense does Satan have access to God? Hmm. Right? Because isn't it weird, like, to think that Satan could actually go to heaven? Well, I don't think that's necessarily, like, it seems to me like if Adam and Eve got kicked out with throne guardians, cherubim with fire, you know, I'm pretty sure the same thing would be extended to Satan, right? Like, so there's just another piece of evidence against the personal name view. But also, I think, and this does go to the sort of why this matters thing here, is that if we're not careful, we'll give too much credit to Satan, right? So the real question is not, well, in what sense does Satan have access to God? I think a better question is, man, in what sense does Satan have access to us? And the answer to that question is in a very limited sense, right? No matter whether this is the capital S personal pronoun, Satan, or it is the adversary, HaSatan, there is nothing that can happen which God does not decree or allow. Everything is underneath the sovereign hand of our Creator. And so it doesn't matter, to paraphrase the scriptures, what man can do unto me. It doesn't matter what Satan can do unto me, because everything is underneath of the power of God. And I think many times we'll give Satan credit for something that was probably either carried out by A, one of his spiritual henchmen, which he has plenty, we call them demons, or us, ourselves, our flesh. We're our own worst enemy. Just ask the Apostle Paul. Ironically, there are two enemies the Apostle Paul talks about. One is our flesh that lives inside us, and the other is the princes and principalities of the air, Satan, the god of this world, and his minions. Our enemies are never another person, right? It's not that blue-haired, trans-identifying, leftist or whatever on your Facebook feed that is your enemy. It's the evil and wickedness that's inside your own heart, or the spiritual powers out there, the unseen world that is influencing the powers in the seen world, right? Those are the real enemies. And so if we keep that in view, then we'll always be okay. That's the main thing that I think we can take away from this, is no matter what, God is still in control. I mean, that's kind of the practical point.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I think that's what it comes down to, is recognizing, you said it, but I'll just say it again, is because Steve and I talk about quite a bit, is we give Satan and we just give evil way too much credit. And like what Steve said, that we shouldn't be focusing on external stuff that can affect us when we already have our own internal problems in each and every one of us. It's not others. It's yourself.
Yep. That's right. So to answer the question 45 minutes later, why is Satan on God's payroll? He isn't.
He's
in my
not.
View, the adversary is, though, just like the cherubim are, the seraphim are, the malach are, the destroyer was, that's God's payroll, right? But Satan, the evil being that we know who oppresses us day in and day out, the adversary who walks around roaring like a lion seeking whom he may devour, he's not on God's payroll, but he is under the sovereign hand and control of God. So that's it.
That is it. It only took us 45 minutes to get there.
Yep. You know me, I gotta, it's that context, that history, we gotta get into it. So it matters.
100%.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, hey, look, if you're following this, please share, like, comment. We are loving this. We're over 700 subscribers now, Alex.
Yeah, that's
on
crazy.
YouTube.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, we never thought that would happen. I don't think we ever did.
No, no. And podcast, the audio podcast is growing too. So if you don't know, we're on audio too. So you can always feel free to listen to us there. So yeah, it's exciting times for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't watch and drive. If you're driving, listen to the audio.
I concur. All right, Alex. That's it.
All right,
for this
Steve.
One.
We'll see you next time.
Later.